Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Bryce Castillo.
Hello. Hi.
Justin Robert Young.
Yo, what's up? It's me, Justin Robert Young.
So I did a thing last week. I had met up with a friend, and my friend was like, there was an event. Basically, like, Disney has this accelerator program where they back a few different startup companies and stuff, and they were doing demos and stuff. And my friend said, oh, come, we'll go to one of the demos. I had no idea what we were going to. And then he says, oh, have you heard about this thing called The Void?
The Void, like,
oh,
the...
Oh, no! You did The Void?
Wait, what's The Void?
Oh, my God.
So, The Void is a company that is doing attraction-based virtual reality, right? So what you do is they've got IP for things like Ghostbusters. They're opening one up in downtown Disney for a Star Wars-based VR experience, Secrets of the Empire. And what you do is... you go put on your backpacks and your VR stuff, and then you go into a room with your friends, you know, four or five people, whatever, and then it turns on, and it's VR, it's room scale, so you walk from room to room to room, and you do stuff, and you have adventures. So the one they're putting in Disney, which we did, the Disney one, the Star Wars one, I didn't do, but if you can see, find a trailer for that, looks very cool. You get a gun, you have a gun, you track. Now, the demo I did was a demo of the Ghostbusters one, so... what I saw wasn't going to be the same one that's at the actual attraction. The actual attraction's like 30 minutes, like the full experience, they say, is 30 minutes long, which includes probably putting on equipment, et cetera. And they do really neat things as you go through there. Like we're watching the trailer right now where they show people putting on the gear. You got vests on, you got headsets on, you get a gun that tracks. You look around, you see everybody else around you. They're all given, you know, virtual avatar bodies. This one, you're a stormtrooper, you know, in a inside of an elevator or a thing about to open in a KTSO type droid, and you're about to go out there and to get land on a platform. Now, what they're able to do in this, which is really cool, is like when I went into an elevator, I did the Ghostbusters one. Okay. So I was a Ghostbuster. When I went into there, you're on a platform that like shakes a little bit. And then when you're in an open air area, you'll feel wind on your body. And they do some really cool little things to sort of enhance it besides just that. So I did the Ghostbusters one where it starts off where you're in it, you turn it, you know, the thing turns on, you see the person in front of you is just sort of a, you know, a avatar Ghostbuster with, they've got their pack on. When everywhere you hold your gun, it moves the Ghostbuster proton pack emitter. And what was cool, there was a flashlight on it. And that was one of the really cool things for it. If you're used to VR, you're sort of familiar with this thing. Is like, as you move it around, you see different things. Now, the attraction we're seeing here, for the Ghostbusters VR experience, is a lot more detailed, where they show you walk down into a subway. They've got props and stuff from the movies. They've got a lot of really cool, you know.
Are these wax sculptures?
Yeah, it looks like they got wax sculptures of the, I guess they did another Ghostbusters movie recently. I didn't know about this. So when I went in there, you start off in this room, and it looks like a pretty detailed room, but it is an Oculus. So it is an Oculus. It has the limitations of the Oculus as far as its field of view, et cetera. But you look around the room, it's pretty realistic. They did all this thing in Unity, et cetera. And then all of a sudden a ghost appears and you zap the ghost, and then the door opens and you go into the door, and then you go into another room and you go into an elevator, and the elevator shakes and moves, and you look out through a window and you can actually see, you know, the city around you. And then you go into another room, and like the Marshmallow Man breaks away. This is where you're standing on the balcony and you feel the wind and you feel like you're out there in the middle of New York City.
Wow.
Kind of a cartoonized sort of New York City, and then wind and whatever. You go look over the edge. It's pretty amazing. You know, a lot of people have already played with VR, and in the location they're in, they would do cool stuff like actually, like if there's a chair in the room, they'll put a real chair in there. So you'll see a chair and you could sit down on the chair. And so they'll do some kind of real physical things inside the environment.
Yeah, I mean that is the I think the best feature of one of these experience type VR projects is that you can have it be in a specific location. You can entice people to come out to a specific location that is set up, you know, exactly how these rooms are going to be in the virtual reality space compared to, you know, trying to coordinate whatever your own home VR space looks like. I think that's definitely the secret sauce for something like this.
Well, and what it really demonstrates is that the tech is A, there to the point where it's worth building the facility around it, and B, that it is light enough. You know, I think it's you know, we've seen, I mean, how long ago, Bryce, was the first time that we did Handlebar for South By?
That would have been
4 years ago or 5 years ago?
Four or five. I want to say five sounds right.
But like I remember they right around the corner, they had a Game of Thrones thing set up, a little display where you could come in, and it was a similar thing, far less interactive. It was you putting on a Vive and effectively being going up the elevator to the top of the wall, and you would feel, you know, the chill and the breeze and everything looking out on top of the wall. And, you know, that is something that is great to demonstrate your ability to look around, but it's not quite light enough or allows you the kind of freedom for you to do what the Void is looking to let you do by setting everything up in such intricate detail. So, I mean, I'm just so thrilled that this tech is getting lighter and more powerful all the time, so you can continue to do really, really cool stuff like this.
Here's my concerns for overall commercial VR attractions, and I've said this before. This used Oculus gear, right? And Oculus gear, to me, it's still screen door. It's still like a 130, very narrow point of view. And it's frustrating. It's the same. And I prefer sort of the Vive because I think it's slightly better, what have you. That does have full room scale tracking, which is great. But the rate at which consumer gear is getting better, there's already a Kickstarter, a fully funded Kickstarter. Again, not to say that that means this is going to happen, but we will get something like this. A company, a Chinese company, it says they'll have January or February twin 4K displays. They call it an 8K display. Technically, it's not, but we'll call it, you know, they call it an 8K VR display. A 4K display for each eye. They've got their own software for basically upscaling. People have used this, say you get no screen door effect. It looks very, very crisp. They've got this technology right now, a very, very cool. It's a very, like a 200 degree wide point of view, okay? Much, much, much wider field of view than what we've gotten before, which is what I would have loved. I would have loved, loved, loved a much wider field of view. I would like to get rid of the screen door because when I'm, you know, I have an Oculus Rift, actually lent it to a dev company. I've yet to see it again. When I'm looking at something like, yeah, I could do this with my hardware, except walking around the room, that was a little bit to me like, yeah, I'd like to see this improve. Vive has announced next year they're going to increase the size of which you can do room scale tracking to like 33 by 33 feet.
Wow.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So wow, it's going to be a much larger space. What I think this means is that I think this is the next gen escape room, is that, you know, you license some really cool sort of software that you can do this, like these sort of big IP or whatever like this. And then some people say, okay, you want to put a chair here, a table here, and some other things inside of this room and go to another room, et cetera. And you can then take over any warehouse or space and turn it into a VR space. Eventually, you're going to have the 80s arcade effect where the consumer gear just gets so much better, so much faster that these things either got to go really, really crazy with really, really high-end tech or environments, or it's just, you know, they fade away.
Well, we already saw this was within this past week, the Oculus Go headset, which is a self-contained headset that includes the processing and video it's not hooked up to a PC. It is a PC.
But it's not room tracking.
But it is miniaturized. The idea that you need it to be set up to a huge desktop to get Oculus.
It's a gear. It's a Samsung gear, but their thing. I mean, it's a phone inside of a box. It's not you know, I would, it's to me, it's like that. Yeah, it's taking, it's a, you know, it's a standard. I mean, it's, but I mean, we've, you know, it's the Google card, it's the cardboard, like when there was the UCS MXR lab thing, just a basic display kind of thing. But yeah, again, yes, you're, and to your point, Bryce, let me not disparage your point. Yes, we are getting, we're fast approaching. This is what I've been saying before, is that the, when we see the stuff that, you know, the carrying the PC on your backpack, whatever, is, yeah, this year it's a $200 device without room sensing. As processors get faster and it can build in room sensing, absolutely 100% is yes, these things we're going to see in the next 3 or 4 years, you're going to be able to buy a 4K, you know, iDisplay VR goggle headset for a few $100. It's room sensing that does all of this.
Yeah.
You know, I'll tell you, there is something though to the idea of that community feeling, and whether or not it is, you know, a amusement level stuff that becomes the new VR escape room, or it's just take a bunch of Vives, and if you have enough room scale sensors, you can do something a lot cheaper. I had a kind of really awesome experience on Friday where for the first time in my adult life, I went to a barcade with John Teasdale, my co-creator on Contender, and we played a game, Killer Queen. Are you familiar with the game Killer Queen?
No, is this a VR arcade game?
Not VR, but stay with me and I'll bring it back there. Killer Queen is the first time that I saw a new arcade game that I felt like this is built for why people bring in arcade machines in 2017, because the kids' amusement element of it has kind of been replaced by phones and consoles, right? It started getting knocked out with consoles and now it became a phone thing. And so you have these barcades where by and large, it's a lot of nostalgia of people who are now in their 20s and 30s that want to drink beer and play games like they did when they used to go to pizza parties when they were kids. But Killer Queen is 5-on-5, 50 cents a pop per cabinet. And it's like kind of real-time strategy. And it's like it looks kind of stupid just to watch the screen, but when everybody is playing and it's this big, fun, super hectic game that really just takes over this corner of the bar. There's only, I think, probably 20 or so in America. But I just look at, you know, you look at this and you see how simple it is in terms of what it was designed for. But it really captures that in-person dynamic. And that's what I would suspect, to Andrew's point, with as the consumer level grade stuff continues to get better and better and better, it's going to be about the ingenious way that you can make a bunch of people have fun in a room together. And it won't necessarily have to be a situation where you got to build a very, very intricate, experience. You know, it can be something a little bit more simple.
You know, you combine that with like one, which is cool is that, you know, the experience I did was very cool. And I highly recommend if you get a chance to go check out the Void. I'm going to go do the Star Wars one when that opens up. I'm excited to do that. But it uses like Unity or Unreal Engine, which is open to anybody. Two devs, you know, a lone dev could go in there and create a pretty intense VR game now. You can do that. And you combine that with the ability to get consumer off-the-shelf tech or a little bit slightly better stuff. And then you put the ingenuity of creating a cool space. You do something really neat. You know, I went and did the Scum and Villainy bar, which was this sort of very Star Wars inspired bar, which was kind of a neat thing, but it was sort of like, I wish there was something else to go do there. You know, it's kind of like, oh, this is really cool. I wish there was something more to it. But you combine that with, hey, we're going to create, a very cool VR bar, VR place where you go do your VR games, you have a bar, you hang out, you get some drinks beforehand, wait for your time to go in there. It becomes a very cool way to extend upon like the escape room thing, whatever. So I think that could be a new thing where you could come up with like exclusive sort of the tools to develop this stuff are very accessible. So I could see people saying, yeah, we're going to create a really cool VR interactive experience. We've got a room, you've got the VR glasses on, but they're props. You can sit in chairs and stuff and at desks, or we've got cockpits where you go in there and do a really cool thing. And it feels like you're really in said environment. You know, it's that haunted house meets escape room meets VR. I think that could be a cool thing for the next 10 years.
Yeah, and as the prices on that technology come down and down, I could even see where you go to a barcade or some David Buster's thing, and they've got, you know, one of those little shooty booths, but instead of going in and you're just looking at a big monitor, you've also got a cheap, easy to fix and replace headset inside, and now you're playing the shooting game in VR. And it's something specific that only you can do in a contained space out, you know, in public versus what you have at home. Like, I think the scale of it is such that you can't have bespoke experiences that a home, you know, that the home experience doesn't make as possible as easily.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and you know, I think what they will always have is the ability that you're with other people, and why that's cool and why that's not cool is something that's really crucial to understand, because it's not just the technology, you know, and that's what I think is interesting now, is as the prices fall on stuff like that and it gets easier to build, it's like, okay, well then design it for the experience as opposed to just designing it because that's where games go.
Yeah. And I see that. I think the add-on thing you can have that's not because one of the things that I appreciate of the Void did things that you couldn't do in your living room. You know, couldn't have the floor that shook like an elevator. You know, you could. But I mean, like fans that turned on when you walked in, you're outside and you felt like you're feeling the wind. Little sprays and little things like that that just add to that furniture. Things like that. You know, making an environment that maps it. So,
and as more access to the software side spreads, it could be a thing where, you know, like you mentioned, the idea of like an escape room where you could easily make different variables for these escape rooms and make those experiences change every time someone goes, where mm-hmm. the puzzles are different or randomly generated.
You could be a dev team and say, we're going to develop a cool experience and we're going to license to other people who want to do it. You know, somebody could come out with a hardware base to say this is the ruggedized version of whatever of the 8K displays and the room sensing. And then, you know, Steam or somebody else could say, hey, we'll come out with a system for like, you know, a pay per use, whatever kind of way, like a royalty based system. So you could say, oh, you know, like, you know, indie devs could create experiences that, you know, 20 different places across the country could then do.
Yeah.
Franchise it. Which I think could be a really cool, and that the idea of that niche game like that, it's kind of a really cool idea, you know?
Yeah. Like, yeah. And the ability, if you're running, you know, just a space with, you know, the bare minimum, fairly cheap kind of tech, then you can flip that space all the time.
Yeah. You know, I looked at, cause after I did this, the Void thing, I'm like, I think the model this is really going to be closer to is going to be paintball.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and if someone, I wonder if, specifically in the escape room idea, you know, we saw part of what makes the Vive such a good competitor for the Oculus is that it has the software backing from Steam, where they're making, you know, the APIs and just the underlying software layer a standard. And mm-hmm. I would not be surprised if someone was working on or came out with soon a similar thing for, like Unity is for game development, but for escape rooms, and it's built to say, hey, you know, this is the size of your space, these are the puzzles that you can plug in, you can do X, Y, and Z with all these different tech components that you have in there, and mm-hmm. you really could do a franchise thing where it could be not more difficult than making the physical puzzles different in a real space.
Escape Agreed. Room. Agreed. My pick is The Void. Check it out.
Where did you experience this? Where could someone go to, like?
I experienced it at a secret Disney warehouse in Burbank that was not listed. So
their website says they've got some in Anaheim, Dubai, Linden, New York, Orlando, and Toronto. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So mine is Killer Queen. Go play Killer Queen with some friends. Looks like there's one in Austin at Pinballs, Bryce.
Oh, cool. I feel like I saw it at a convention once, but didn't get a chance to play it. So maybe
John was raving about it, and John raves about a lot. But I was like, whatever, nerd, with your arcade game. Then I played it, and I'm like, oh man, this is fun. It's chaotic. It's quick. Sometimes it lasts a while. Sometimes it lasts a short amount of time. Since it's always, you know, one out of your five people that's playing has to cough up the 50 cents, so it never really feels like you're just getting bled out. So yeah, it was a great couple hours.
Pretty cool. I have another game recommendation. I played this over the weekend on Twitch, but I think if you have just a couple hours, it's called Stories Untold. Have either of you guys heard about this?
No.
Mm.
So it's a text. It's kind of an adventure text adventure game. It's like presented as these four episodes of weird speculative-ish fiction. So like one of them, you're playing a text adventure game in which you play another text adventure game inside of it. One of them is like this scientific experiment. They're all pretty straightforward, and they all tell their own interesting stories, and it finds an interesting way to tie them all together. And it really, for a text adventure game, it's incredibly visual. One of them is for all intents and purposes, text adventure, but you're also like working a console and doing all these different puzzle elements. It's only about 2 hours to play through all of it and see all of it. And it's also a cheaper game. I think the full price is like $10, but it's really cool. And for what it is, the fact that it has such a strong visual element to all of these different episodes is a really good change of pace. Because it could just as easily been just a command line or a text prompt with sound design. But by having these different visual environments, it's very cool. And I love that all of the episodes have this sort of cheesy opening graphic, like credit sequence. That makes it feel like some, you know, science fiction anthology show.
Mm-hmm. Well, they use like the kind of a Stranger Things look for the logo there.
They do. And actually when it comes in at the end of that sequence, the letters sort of like squeeze out and into each other, that it has a very Stranger Things feel in that specific moment too. But that's pretty cool. And It really is a fun just couple of hours. It's Stories Untold.
Excellent. Writing that down. Gentlemen, this has been After.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.